we're in the middle of a heavy snow week. All of a sudden, the schools have been out. Of course, we were talking about drifting and blowing of snow. How are the city trucks out there handling all this snow?
Yeah, we thought we were going to get away with a light winter. We actually are down considerable amounts of money. I mean, hundreds of thousands of dollars less than what we had to spend in the last winter season. And this week now, as we're starting to catch up, the biggest toll, of course, is on personnel. I mean, these are about 23 people who are responsible for maintaining the roads 24 hours a day. So they came in at about 4:30 in the morning on Monday morning, and then we're actually 3:30 in the morning, and we're out till 7 p.m., and then came back the next morning at 4:30 in the morning. We're out till about noon, and then have been out this morning since about 3 in the morning, and probably will be through drive time today. So that's an incredible number of hours. It also takes a toll on the equipment. So we've had a few trucks break down, and of course, this is not a city that, you know, we don't staff up or equipment up for the worst snow. We can't do like some northern cities do. So when we lose some equipment, it's a problem. So some people might see smaller trucks out there. You'll see the smaller equipment that we use to do sidewalks in the downtown area. We also have smaller trucks doing the city-owned parking lots, so that we can keep the larger equipment out on the street. So we're going through an awful lot of salt, but we're pretty well stocked, and just try to keep the equipment repaired and the staff rested.
And people have a certain amount of time to clear their sidewalks too, including businesses.
Right, and we're trying, you know, we've always tried to do a warning first. Now in the downtown area in particular, we've kind of gotten away from doing warnings. We feel like having done that so many years in a row, the education phase it's about as complete as it can be. So, you know, we'll start to issue tickets immediately. It's so important to keep the downtown sidewalks as clear as possible. We have so many people relying on that as their primary mode of transportation, but also it's the way to the bus terminal. So it's key to keep those sidewalks clear.
Moving on, probably the bigger news this past week was the announcement about the hospital not staying downtown. Of course, we talked about that last month. It didn't really come as a big surprise, but I think maybe what I seem to be hearing about the most was that that decisions seemed to happen behind closed doors. The public felt like they didn't have a chance to weigh in on that. Was that the case?
Well, I don't know. Obviously, I'm not part of that decision-making process, and we weren't included in that process, and so I'd assume that that's true, that the general public wasn't as well. I'm not even sure how much of the decision is being made at a local level versus up in Indianapolis. So I don't even know how much of the local management of the hospital has been included in all the decision-making. That's something that we all knew was likely to happen after that's why I was so concerned about the merger, that local control, and I don't mean just local management, but local input is lost when you centralize decision-making up in someplace else, and in this case, up in Indianapolis.
What about the city involvement with that decision?
Well, none with the decision itself. Our involvement now is with the reutilization of the site and ensuring that we negotiate a package, almost an exit package, from the hospital. You know, this is, you and I have talked a bit before, this is a disappointment in that we had so many public institutions like the public library, the post office, Bloomington Transit, Fairview Elementary School, all choosing to reinvest in downtown to expand in place. So it's very disappointing to see the hospital not make that same choice to invest in downtown. On the other hand, this isn't like RCA Thompson, where you had a major employer leave the community. This is an employer that will remain in the community, employ a lot of people, continue to have charitable impact within the community as an employer and all those employees. And the loss will be to the downtown area. At the same time, we now have no other choice than to look at this as an opportunity to reutilize that with a vision of what we want it to look like. And so I guess the part that is analogous to the Thompson RCA departure is that the city negotiated an exit package, and there were costs that employer incurred to make sure that the property was usable by the city, and that the consequences of its decision to leave the community were, at least in part, somewhat of a trade-off in terms of the monetary package that was put together. And I have that same expectation for the hospital. They're a good corporate citizen that has the reputation to worry about. They're a nonprofit, so they have an obligation to taxpayers, something in exchange for that nonprofit status, that they're not paying property taxes. So, you know, we do anticipate that the hospital will contribute to the community in whatever way that might be. It might be the demolition of pay for the demolition of buildings. It might be for making the land available at low cost or no cost. But obviously now, those are the kind of decisions that need to be made, and that's what the Revitalization Committee is about.
I guess what I was trying to get at, too, was I think I came across a report where the city council may still be trying to get involved, to saying that decision isn't final,
right.
but it sounds like from your perspective, it is final and you're moving on to how to redevelop the area.
Well, my belief, as you and I have talked about over the years, has been for more than 7 years, I've believed the decision was made. Now, it's technically accurate that I don't think a final decision as to where the hospital's moving has been made, and things can change. It's not impossible. So I certainly don't blame anybody who might want to continue to apply pressure and believe that can make a difference. At the same time, you know, we need to get ready for the reutilization should that happen. And I will say, and you and I have talked about this as well, even if the decision was reversed, there would have to be things put in place, economic, tax-related, economic development-related, infrastructure-related, to make sure that the site, however it's used, whether it's used as an expansion site for the hospital, which it sounds like it's not going to be, or whether it's going to be reutilized for new use, all the tools we've been putting in place will continue to be useful. And so we're wanting to be at that table right away to start working on it, whatever the final decision is.
The other part I haven't had the answer yet, and I'm not sure that you do either, mm-hmm. but that I've thought about was that due to the fact that it's a regional hospital, mm-hmm. and you know, now the city's growing, mm-hmm. a lot of traffic lights, a lot of traffic downtown, wondering if that maybe the move to the new area off of the bypass or 37 is safer and better for the customers.
Well, you know, if this is a debate we somewhat had when we talked about I-69, people talking about the number of accidents that would be reduced because it's an interstate versus stop, you know, light intersections. Look, you know, I grew up on a community right a few blocks away from an interstate, and sadly had one of the higher fatality rates in the state. I mean, interstates are not necessarily that much safer. You also don't have the number of highway cuts, so that means you've got to travel farther to get to the exits to get back to the hospital or wherever your destination is in some cases. So I don't think that's a deciding factor. Certainly, I don't think it would factored into the decision for the hospital.
Last question on this, though. You did come up with a commission to help with that redevelopment. Yeah. Can you tell me how you came across that and how that came to be?
Yeah, you know, I look back at, again, somewhat analogous to the Thompson RCA departure, and the city put together a steering committee of sorts to start to look at the reutilization of that site. Now, that had a different angle to it because there was that loss of employment. It was also a loss of the charitable giving power. That was one of the largest contributor, if not certainly within the top few, for the United Way. And we're not going to suffer that kind of consequence this time. When GE decided to downsize and eventually leave the community, you know, we put together another one of these kind of committees that you get a broad cross-section of people that have input as to what are the impacts of whatever the corporate interest decision is. In this case, there's going to be an impact on the neighborhoods, going to be a tremendous impact on the property owners who own property, especially that are health related, on the periphery of the hospital. There's certainly going to be an impact on the downtown, and then we'll have that huge economic impact that we hope will be a plus, that we'll be able to find uses for that property that will contribute to not just the downtown, but the community's economic vitality. So Vi Simpson will chair this. She has incredible background and being just uniquely qualified for this. I mean, the leadership capacity, she's been the health expert, really, when it came to the, we still will have health needs downtown. And I've included as well the nonprofits that are impacted. You know, you've got New Hope and volunteers in medicine that are in hospital-owned properties, and we want to make sure that they're attended to. And that's, again, Vi's expertise when it comes to social services. So she does bring an awful lot to that table, and just the ability to bring lots of people together. And that's exactly what we have. But the committee itself is upwards of 25 people at this point. And so I've had, I think, 15 people that volunteered to serve on it since we announced the 25-member panel. And we won't be able to include all those people in that initial setting, but we will establish subcommittees and then have everyone, have stakeholder groups that will be represented as well. So everyone will have a voice at this table, and the meetings will be open. You know, there will be work sessions and subcommittee meetings that might not be big publicly announced meetings, but all the main steering committee meetings will be open. So I certainly understand those who've been upset, feeling that this hasn't been an open process going into this. The city government had no control over that, but the city council and the city administration want to ensure that from here on out, it's a pretty open public process.
The other big news story since we've last talked was the Kirkwood development passed, narrowly of 5-3. To go just a bit back on that, were you disappointed that it passed, knowing that it violates the university overlay area?
No, it doesn't. You know, it doesn't violate it. I understand why the question would be asked that way, and how some people feel that way. There are many things that are approved that exceed the standards that are laid out. If you look at that, the same language in the UDO and the growth policies plan that currently exists, not the one that we're considering, but the one that currently exists, it talks about trying to create incentives for hotels to locate downtown. We obviously are also trying to create infill downtown and not have development of apartment complexes or hotels and all just in the periphery of the community, trying to avoid sprawl. So this happened to be an area where you had competition of principles. You know, you don't want to have buildings that are outsized for Kirkwood. At the same time, you're trying to concentrate development in the downtown, trying to concentrate visitors, locating them in the hotels that serve those visitors, locating in the downtown. So it's competing ideas. And I certainly have made it pretty clear I'm concerned about the character of downtown when it comes to chains. So I understand the frustration some people have, but this was a pretty good opportunity to review what do we want to have in the new GPP as we move forward, which is, has the pendulum swung too far? I look back in the history of this community, and I mean back a century, and you look at the Graham Hotel, a very tall building. I don't know what the feeling was at the time, but it certainly stood out in the landscape. There are plenty of tall buildings in the downtown area that go back many decades, if not 100 years. And, you know, these are buildings that, may have not been welcome at the time, but certainly now we view as community treasures and we don't want to lose them. So it's important to look at the way that the downtown has changed. I mean, I'm sure there were people who were upset that the automobile was coming to the square. There are people who were upset probably when trains started to come, and then people upset when trains started to leave downtown. So it's always that pendulum swinging back and forth. And the things that we're upset about now are the things that people wanted a number of decades ago to try to get downtown to grow. And I'm sure that the things that we're all upset about now, people 50 years from now will be trying to protect as historic when someone else proposes tearing them down. So it's always going to be the ebb and flow. So I think the debate was really healthy, and I think the result will be fine for the community and be good for the economy and the 24-hour, 7-day-a-week activity in downtown.
Any plans for adjusting for parking in that area during the construction when all those lots become full of construction gear, or is that just part of it?
I think that's part of it. There are opportunities there to look at the old bus station that will be torn down, and we could expand a little bit of parking there. I don't want to speak for the church, but you've got the old post office site, and at some point it might be the city could arrange maybe to work with the church on a deal there. But yes, I mean, this is exactly why, I know it's a dangerous thing to talk about, but I'm not running for re-election, so I'll talk about it. And that's parking meters. You know, these were the days we were preparing for, was that we knew all these free, unofficially free parking spaces that the banks have been, banks plural, because it was Monroe County, then Monroe Bank, and now O&B and Workingmen's, you know, they've always let people park on their lots after their hours. And certainly they talk about the handshake deal they had with the churches dating back decades. But those times have changed. We all saw that they were coming, or should have seen that they were coming, and we needed to get ready to manage on-street parking, because all those lots, all of them, are going to go away. And new buildings will be built on top of them. Some of them will have parking, some of them won't. Remember, the city council years ago decided that it wanted to eliminate more and more parking downtown, not just eliminate existing parking in terms of getting rid of all the surface lots, but also that new facilities that are built would be underparked. You would not have, for instance, if you had 100 people living in an apartment, you would not have 100 parking spaces. You'd have 80, maybe 50. And that was inevitably going to lead to exactly what is happening. So, you know, I have a little trouble with some people now saying we're underparked, we need to protect these parking places for these handshake deals, who are the very same people who 10 years ago were saying we needed to eliminate off-street parking in downtown. This was the inevitable result, and you know, meters are put in place to try to manage that, but I think the pressures will continue to build. After these buildings are built, there are going to be hundreds of people living in them, visiting them, patronizing them in terms of the stores that get, the restaurants that get built, and office space working in them. So this is the future of downtown. We are going to see more people and a stagnant number of on-street parking spaces. You can't grow on-street parking. So I think in the long run, we'll see some more parking facilities built. Although again, there were members of the council 10 years ago saying they were dead set opposed to more parking structures. So it's possible those very same council members have changed their philosophy, and we'll see the new GPP reflect that change.
Well, now Bloomington's the seventh largest city in the state.
Sixth largest.
Sixth now.
Yeah.
Is it just time now for to say, you know, Bloomington's not the small town mom and pop place anymore? Yeah.
It is in some regard. It is absolutely not. I mean, it's certainly a small city.
Because I mean, that's what
growing.
I think you keep hearing from a lot of the negativity toward or people against these big developments downtown.
Yeah, and again, you look at, for instance, a beloved lost restaurant was Ladyman's. You know, there's a lot of people who are upset about Ladyman's. What they don't remember is that there used to be a house where Ladyman's was. I mean, years ago, Kirkwood was residential. And I'm sure if we went back and looked, we'd see people upset about the loss of these beautiful homes on Kirkwood for a building that eventually became the home of Ladyman's. So some year, my guess is, we'll see people upset about whatever it is that's going to go in where Ladyman's was. We'll see people upset 50 years from now that building that we're all upset about today is being proposed to go away. It's always that ebb and flow. Look at the Indiana Theater, now the Buskirk Chumley. Again, that had been a home in that area. Now we look at it and think we would never want to lose that theater. And it's always going to be the shifts, and that's the way it should work. I mean, we adapt as we move forward and try to make the best of it. But I don't think we're losing that small town charm of Bloomington. You know, I think people are overreacting if they believe that we're losing Bloomington. If you look around, just the number of small, locally owned businesses, how eclectic Bloomington continues to be. You know, absolutely, I'm concerned about the loss of community character. Again, I always, you know, go back to that. That's why I was concerned about the chains on Kirkwood. I don't want people to look at Kirkwood the way they do now at State Road 37, soon to be I-69, where you plop somebody down on 37, I-69, they would have no idea where they were. It looks just like any other mid-sized, even big-sized cities, because it's all the same. That wouldn't happen on Kirkwood. You put somebody down on Kirkwood, even if there's a hotel that's taller than some people would like, you'll know you're on Kirkwood. And it's important to maintain that character and know that our identity still is Bloomington as an eclectic, unique place.
Well, there are also changes coming from outside of the downtown area with the announcement of Whole Foods over there by the mall. Lucky Supermarket is making an announcement about opening in Bloomington. Seeing maybe a surge now with some of these more upscale grocery stores. Does the city ever worry about them pushing out those smaller stores like
Absolutely.
The Sahara Mart or Blooming Foods?
Absolutely. Yes. I mean, there was a huge demand for Whole Foods. I've been surprised at the number of people. You know, there's certain iconic brands that are chains that I still have heard over the years people really want. People want Walgreens, they want Costco, and they've wanted Whole Foods. And yes, absolutely, there's a concern, in my book at least, it's the same impact that the Walmarts of the world had on the downtown hardware stores and pharmacies and five and dime shops that were located in downtown. It's, again, part of the evolution of a community and of an economy. So I don't welcome all those kind of changes, but we don't have much choice in those. You can't put up a wall in your community. So it's how do you protect what you have that's important. And making sure that we maintain the uniqueness, the character of the community is key.
We have a question from a Jason Harmon. Would like to know if you think the Switchyard Park project will start construction this year or have any general timeline?
Yeah, there won't be construction likely this year. What this year is about is taking the master plan that has been done and turning it into blueprints. And I don't mean that to be overly technical, but to actually take the philosophy and the plans and put them on paper as to a construction schedule and a plan for exactly what it will look like. The other big thing in 2015 is trying to identify funding. And I hope we're within a couple of months of at least trying to find a way to fund, if not the entirety of the project over, it'll be at least a four-year construction project once it begins. And my guess is it'll be longer than that. But if not the entirety of it, at least the first phase, and trying to define what that first phase will be. The big trick here is going to be how to balance that project with a lot of other needs of the community. And that's what people are reading about with these tax increment finance district. We're trying to consolidate the TIF revenues so that we have the purchasing power to be able to do big projects. And we certainly don't plan to do those in a vacuum. They'll be very publicly talked about, announced. Like I've talked about, the blueprint will be done and shown to the City Council first and to the public, to the Redevelopment Commission, which are citizen members. So there's an awful lot to decide, and 2015 will be that, I hope will be built, I can't guarantee it, but I hope that if the council approves, for instance, the TIF consolidation, that we'll be able to do projects like the Switchyard Park. But that's what's at the heart of this TIF consolidation that we're looking at.
Okay. The planned deer reduction was called off last week. We already know you were opposed to it anyway.
Yeah.
Your reaction and what next?
Well, that's a big question in terms of my reaction. I have personal reaction, then I have, I guess, the professional reaction. I mean, personal reaction was somewhat a sense of relief. I live across from Griffey. I have a lot of deer in my yard, in my neighborhood, and I'm fine with that. I completely respect that there are many people who don't feel that way. That it's a balancing act. But on the other hand, I don't think it was a lost cause simply because that nothing happened. I think it wasn't an official study, but with the contractor, White Buffalo, you know, they learned some things there. They can relay those to the community. I also was relieved from a professional sense. I think it allowed for, although if you look just in the last few days in the media, you might not think this, but I think it's allowed for people to step back and that we kind of go to our respective corners and revisit some other alternatives. For instance, just in the last few days, White Buffalo, who is the contractor hired to kill deer, is now publicly talking about the opportunities for non-lethal deer management in neighborhoods. That was something they never brought up the entire time this had been being discussed. The only people who were bringing that up were the advocates for the animals. And animal welfare advocates have been talking about this issue forever and have not been received very well, honestly, by city government, in fact, both at the administration level and certainly at the council level. And now the contractor who was brought in to kill deer is talking about non-lethal measures in neighborhoods. So already there's been a change, and that came from this period we've been through. So I'm optimistic that we can look for non-lethal measures first and make sure that we weren't trying to do the wrong thing in Griffey. There are those who really want to move forward. I only know that for 2015, we won't revisit the issue of hunting. I don't know what the council will do. I would still prefer that they, it's amazing to me that in Bloomington, Indiana, bow and arrow hunting is still legal. I just think that's offensive at a lot of levels, and it's counter to our culture here. And I hope that the council will take 2015 to start by banning bow and arrow hunting, but also I have no problem that they start to take measures I was asking them a year ago, more than a year ago, to do, and that's to stop allowing the feeding of deer and, you know, look for other measures to try to educate the public on how they can protect their dollars in landscaping and their gardening. And then we look at non-lethal measures.
Last question. I talked with Terre Haute Mayor Duke Bennett last week about the crows, because they had a big problem with crows.
Yeah.
90,000, I think, at one time in their downtown. Yeah. Cannons and fireworks to train them, to move them to roost in certain areas.
Yeah.
How bad is it getting here in Bloomington?
It's getting bad, and it's almost guaranteed to get worse, and that's the problem. You know, we've seen the problem come and go over the years, but this year is particularly bad, and as you mentioned, Mayor Bennett, we've already been in touch. We were in touch weeks ago with Terre Haute and also with Indiana State University. I've forgotten his name, but there's kind of the crow whisperer at Indiana State, and we've already been in touch with him, and he did advise that we were behind the curve this year. You have to get them before they start to roost and then get them to change their behavior early on. I can tell you that we've been told that every year they come back to the exact same place and they're just more and more plentiful, and that the downside, and you've touched on it in your question, is when you do take measures to get them to move, they do exactly that, they move. And so we want to be careful about not just simply solving the problem one place and making it worse someplace else. I've absolutely joked in the building here that if we were to move them over to campus, I might not shed a lot of tears, but I'm guessing that the campus might not take too kindly to that, and I wouldn't either. It's my campus too. But how we can all work together to find how we can make this work and perhaps get them into places that they aren't impacting humans.
So just curious, where is this more of a plan that's going to go into effect for next year, or is there
it
something?
It is. We're training deer to eat crow, and that way to make the deer valuable. And we are looking at taking the measures that Terre Haute and Indiana State University have taken. But you have to do it, I believe it's right before in the fall when they come back to roost for the winter. And we've been told that if you try now, it will simply scare them away from where they are. They will come back right to where they are. You have to catch them before they take root, as it were. And so we're already looking ahead to next year. Issues I never imagined I'd be looking at when I first ran for mayor.